Welcome back to the National Cancer Prevention Workshop, produced by Less Cancer. This year, we are talking about cancer prevention in rural America, screenings and healthcare for better outcomes. My name is Miles O'Brien. I'm a board member at Less Cancer. And today, I'm going to be joined by a fellow board member and a well-experienced maxillofacial surgeon in Warrenton, Virginia. Rob Marino is the executive director of the Fauquier Free Clinic and fellow board member on Less Cancer. Rob, good to see you again. And joining him is Sophie Oswald, who is an oral maxillofacial surgeon in Warrenton. Thank you very much for joining us as well. It's good to have you both with us. Rob, you've been with the Free Clinic for a couple dozen years, and you've got lots of stories to tell about healthcare in rural settings. This year, though, we're going to focus on an overlooked and yet a stunning gap in the system. And that is oral care, dental care, really for all of us, but in particular for people who do not have the means to go see a dentist on a regular basis. I know, this is something that is a problem which has been rising for some time, but I'm just curious, when you decided to sort of take some initiative on this and what that looked like when you finally did?
Well, since the Free Clinic is open that I work in, we have always had some aspect of a dental care and dental clinic. For whatever reason, people don't always associate oral health and dental care with health care in the same way that they do with primary care and medical care and mental health care. And I really think it's a shame because Sophie can tell you, it can really affect somebody's overall health. It's expensive. Even people who have health insurance often don't have a payer for dental care. And if they do have a payer, it's not very generous. And so it's often the last thing people take care of. And people who don't have a lot of disposable income do not spend a lot of it on prevention and going in for regular cleanings and preventive care, which has all kinds of consequences after you wait too long.
Sophie, give us a little bit of the expert's view on this. I did a film a few years back, and part of that story was a young boy in the Baltimore area who literally died of a toothache, which is a stunning statement in this country. But what that raises is that somehow we've created this arbitrary dividing line between the mouth and the rest of the body, and there's two groups of healthcare providers on either side of that line, and a lot of times things slip through the cracks. Just explain, first of all, why there is this kind of separation when it comes to oral healthcare and the rest of our bodies.
Oh, that's a big one. But I think just to make it more simplistic, oral healthcare is just one of those things that you just don't think it's an organ. You think of your brain and your lungs and your heart as something that's a lot more crucial. But a lot of people don't realize you have cardiac issues, you have respiratory issues, everything starts from the oral cavity. And so, just from having some deep probing depth in your gum tissue, which is periodontal disease, can lead you to have a heart attack, ultimately. And so anyways, and I think that, I don't know, it's I've noticed in my own practice that sometimes the way that the insurances have put the system together. For us, our insurances cover only a certain amount and not as much, and patients will have to pay a lot more out of pocket. There's a limit on that, whereas no limit on medical insurances. So yeah, I think it's just been hard on both sides, on the patient side and on the provider side as well.
I think we can't underscore enough how serious the consequences of bad oral health can be to the person in toto, and up to and including cancer.
Yeah, I think what people now fully understand are the ramifications of like eating healthier, making sure you exercise, and that sort of type of hygiene, if you will, or healthcare, and taking care of your body systemically. But from an oral cavity standpoint, it is just one of those things that it takes 2 minutes a day every morning and 2 minutes a day every night, but that prevents so many other diseases as well. And I think sometimes we just put it on the back burner. It's unfortunate.
So, Rob, with that in mind, I presume you see a lot of patients who, frankly, have pretty unhealthy mouths. And I know you've done your best over the years, but you decided to do sort of a bit of a full court press on it recently. First of all, tell us about what you did and how Dr. Oswald helped out, and what that looked like when you kind of opened your doors and said, you know, we're here to help you get your teeth straight, so to speak.
Well, our dental clinic is now open 5 days a week. And, just recently we've started seeing actually more patients for dental care encounters than for medical by a little bit, because the need is so big there. We've added an oral surgery service because some people need oral surgery intervention and they need a difficult extraction or some of the assessments and cancer screening that Sophie can do. It's still not enough, and there's still a long wait to get into my clinic, and that's typical for a charitable clinic all over the state and the country. We recently had an event where we brought students from VCU and from Howard University and set up in the local high school gym to try and do a kind of a crash event and see as many people as we could in one day to kind of get through the backlog. We were able to provide dental care to 260 people in one day in a high school gym, many of whom had not been to the dentist in years. Some people came in and they needed a cleaning. A lot more came in and they needed some fillings or restorative work. And quite a few came in and they needed root canals or oral surgery extractions to get to a more stable place. It's really no way to offer dental care. What you want is prevention and constant, you know, contact and a relationship with a patient, but maybe it's a front door for people to get into the system.
Just so people understand, this is a rural setting, 260 people showing up waiting in the dark, essentially, for care. That's a big turnout, isn't it?
That's probably about as many as we could have seen in that day. We had 36 dental chairs set up. I was there at 5 a.m. It was cold, it was dark, it was raining, and people were lined up waiting for free care, which is really a statement about how desperate people are for that help and how important it is.
So, Sophie, what kinds of cases do you encounter in these situations? And I assume it could be as simple as just polish them up. I suspect there's less of that and a lot more of some real work that needs to be done. And frankly, dental care, to my way experience, is it's multiple visits over sometimes many weeks to do the work. How do you get enough accomplished in these short periods of time with people waiting in line?
So now for this particular event, unfortunately, I wasn't present, but I do it every year in a different location, and I go internationally to do missions as well. But how we try to do is we have different areas. So we have a triage area. When the 260 people come in, we check each and every one of them for what is the most pressing issue. If they have an abscess, so their facial, they have facial swelling or any sort of pain or swelling, we try to go to oral surgery because that's more important. Then if they don't have any of that, they might need some restorative work where we need to do a small filling or a larger filling. And then, obviously some other minor things would be, well, their teeth are pretty cavity-free, technically speaking, without clear radiographs, clear x-rays, then we could just do a cleaning, a hygiene appointment. So that's how we triage them. But for me, obviously, it's been a long time since I've done anything else but oral surgery. So I see the end-of-the-line cases, patients who have pathology, a lump, bump, whatnot, patients who have very, for lack of a better word, we use this a lot in our field, bombed out teeth, meaning that it's just really on its last leg, everything's terminal there, so we have to extract the tooth and debride the site. So I see a lot of bigger cases come to me, and I see so much more. I know the patients can't actually always get the care they need, but I would love for all of us to help them.
Well, so clearly, an ounce of toothpaste prevention is worth a pound of cure here for sure. How do we address that one? There's an education component to it. And Rob, I want you to weigh in on the rural context and how distance can be a disparity. But Sophie, first of all, what can be done to further educate people about the importance of all this? Because I think it's overlooked.
I think the basics is what you mentioned. So toothpaste, for instance, and a decent toothbrush, the correct size, a good, you know, electric one would be preferable, but anything will do. And when you maintain something, it's like your car, for instance, if you get your oil change and you maintain it, it will last you for a lot longer than if you got a brand new nice car and you don't keep up with the maintenance. So that's the first step. But the second step is to also get a checkup. And, you know, even if it's once a year, that's better than none. But twice a year is the recommended amount of visits to come to see the dentist for the generalized comprehensive checks. And then also x-rays, so radiographs. We, as clinicians, cannot see everything with our, you know, naked eyes. So we need something that can actually go a little bit deeper. And a lot of patients have already had pre-existing conditions, meaning they would have had some fillings, root canals, crowns, all these things. We can't see underneath the crowns. They're metal or some sort of some material that's covering the actual tooth, natural tooth anatomy. So it could be basically decaying underneath that, and that needs attention to be addressed to take care of the patient and the tooth. But some patients would just not have that opportunity, and it just gets worse, and then they become abscess. And speaking to the young patient that passed away because of a dental abscess, I was in the hospital trained, obviously, because I'm an oral surgeon for 4 years, and that is one of the most simple but most important in time, the time matters. When the patient comes in, how fast we check them, what antibiotics we put them on, how soon we intervene is very, very important.
Rob, let's circle back to where you are in Fauquier County. In a place like that, the problems, you know, of course, that case that Sophie was just describing, that occurred in Baltimore. Obviously, this can happen anywhere. But factor in the rural nature of your clientele and how this might make it even harder to address this issue.
One thing we run into, you know, among my patients and here in our community is that it's hard for people to get into the doctor, into the dentist, into healthcare. Transportation is a challenge. Things are farther away. There are fewer specialists in our community. And so if you need specialty care, you're often being referred to somewhere that is going to be very hard for you to get to. It's already hard to convince some people to make the choice to make their oral health important. If you put all those barriers in front of them, it's that much harder. We see all kinds of people with really just poor teeth, poor dentition. And that affects your eating, it affects your social skills, it affects your ability to interview and get a job, like facing customers. It's really a lot more impactful than people give it credit for. I also think it's hard to get children. You know, we want to see children before they have dental problems so that they're not scared of the dentist, so that we can teach them self-care and teach their parents self-care. We have limited success getting very young children into our clinic, but we're going to keep going out to schools and spreading the message and trying to invite people and make this important. But sure, being in a rural community does make everything a little bit harder because it's just a little bit farther away and a little bit less accessible.
I'm curious, why is it so much harder to get children in the mix here?
Well, imagine, you know, you're a single mom and you've got two or three children under age 7. Preventive care just never seems to be a priority for a lot of people because they're making tough choices every day about how they can spend their money, how they can spend their time. You know, how can we, if we're sharing one vehicle among multiple people, you know, this is just not something that people bring to the top of their family priorities. But it has a way of coming up. If you don't take care of it, then it'll come back to bite you.
Be true to your teeth or they will be false to you. As my great-grandfather said that, he was in the dental supply business, believe it or not. Sophie, let's talk about the link between dental care, dental screening, and ultimately cancer. What is the importance of that? And is screening effective in this context?
Absolutely. Now, I have to preface that I'm not a head and neck surgeon. So there's different specialists that are more focused on oncology and, you know, cancer. But basically, what we need to do collectively, it starts off with the hygiene or the hygienist, where they do the regular cleanings twice a year or four times a year, depending on the patient has periodontitis or not. And they check the oral cavity for anything that's suspicious. And of course, right after that, the general dentist will check the patients. And so I don't ever get to, quote unquote, check the patients per se, but I always get the referral. So if the dentist noticed something or the hygienist noticed something, they'll write a little referral note to me and the patient will come with that. And I read it and see what they noticed. And most of the time, luckily for me, within my career, it's been over a decade, I've only probably seen one handful of patients that I've had to present the diagnosis of cancer to and refer them out to head and neck surgeons. But other than that, you know, it's just sometimes it's just a benign lesion where the area was traumatized and it just kind of overgrew. Patients kept on re-traumatizing it. It got bigger and bigger. And sometimes it gets to an uncomfortable size. It becomes symptomatic. But I think it's very important to screen it because a lot of things look semi-benign, if you will. So to compare, you can have a little white patch on the cheek or somewhere on the side of the tongue, underneath the tongue, floor of the mouth, we call it. And those areas, you know, again, with the underneath the tongue and the lateral border of the tongue, those are very highly suspicious areas for oral cancer. But patients won't know them because it's smooth and they don't know what the anatomy should look like.
With a detection like that, Sophie, what is the next step for an individual?
It would be surgical biopsy, which means it's a procedure that we take a small sample of it. If it's a small enough size lesion, meaning we don't know what it is, but it's if it's small enough, we can actually excise it and completely take it out. So that would be the best case scenario because sometimes we do the surgical procedure to remove it and send it off for histopathological review by a pathologist, a different doctor, different dentist, and they send the report back saying it is cancerous. At least we pretty much got, you know, took care of it, but not entirely. So then now maybe the patient needs some more treatment with lasers, or if it's a little bit more in depth, we can get scans. And so it depends on where it is. But that's the next step, to do some sort of biopsy to see what the cells are that are involved with this lesion.
Rob, just a couple of thoughts from you on what it's like to see this outpouring of need. This just kind of right there beneath the surface. And, you know, I presume you're going to do more of this because that's the kind of guy you are. But do you have any larger, you know, sort of bigger scale solutions to all of this?
Well, you know, most things come back to money in the end in this country and healthcare. If we could make things more fair and provide more opportunity for payers to, you know, provide this kind of care, I think that would reduce the incidence of trouble. I hate to see people left out, and that's still definitely happening. You know, as far as cancer goes, there are things we know. If you drink alcohol, if you smoke, then you're more likely to develop cancer. So there are things that we can do as, you know, potential patients that can change our incidence of these problems. But when the door is closed or when people are not accessing care, then they get detected later in the process, and then maybe the outcome is less favorable. So the sooner we can get to everybody and get everybody in the front door, the less of these problems are going to face our families here in this country.
Yeah, it's hard to talk about prevention without that, you know, that basic level of, you know, screening and initial and preventative care after all, right?
It's what, you know, Sophie was saying, some things in your mouth look kind of funny. And I'm not trained. I don't know what that is. I need somebody like my general dentist, my hygienist, or an oral surgeon like Sophie to look at that. And if they don't do that, and if I can't access that care, and months and years go by, you know, nothing good is coming of that.
The one last thing to mention, that oral cancer actually is more prevalent in males. And it's, I think it's basically one of those where, depending on the anatomy and where it is, it can basically be associated with one of the simple things that you wouldn't know, but it's an HPV virus that patients can get from an STD. So I want to kind of highlight that a little bit so people are aware.
Rob Marino is the executive director of the Fauquier Free Clinic, has been there for 24 years. He's also a member of the board of Less Cancer, and we're very happy to have him on that board. Sophie Oswald is a maxillofacial surgeon in Warrenton, Virginia. Thank you both so much for the good work you do. You are watching the National Cancer Prevention Workshop produced by Less Cancer. This year, we're talking about cancer prevention in rural America, screenings, and healthcare for better outcomes. Thanks for watching. I'm Miles O'Brien.